This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Anyone else feel like a business class required in your schooling curriculum would have been massively helpful? Because same. We went to school to become therapists, and here we are 10 years later, really noticing the void in our knowledge on the business side of therapy, which is why we love our Masterclass membership. Masterclass has truly increased our confidence in running our therapy practice, The Therapy Group. Pros like Chris Voss, Robin Roberts, Daniel Pink, and Mark Cuban have filled that void and taught us so much about decision-making, negotiating, maximizing our time, and effective communication. This year, you too can learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving, Masterclass actually helps you do it. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. masterclass.com/shrinkchicks.
Katie Duke is our new favorite person. She's a board-certified acute care nurse practitioner with over 16 years of experience as a nursing professional. She's a mentor, a media expert, keynote and motivational speaker, podcast host, serious shout out to the Bad Decisions podcast if you haven't heard it, and honestly, she's an all-around incredible human. We talked with Katie about her experience as a crisis contract COVID nurse in New York right after a major breakup, how her mental health was affected, her own severe case of COVID, and so much more. But we also wanted to give you a trigger warning before you listen to this episode. Our conversation contains heavy topics such as death, grief, Katie's firsthand traumatic experiences from the COVID ICU, and the specific hardships nurses endure. We wanted to first give a moment to every nurse and frontline worker that has done so much for us this year. If you need to, please feel free to skip this one if it feels too heavy for you, but it's important information and a really important story that we thought needed to be told. Thank you, and we hope you have a wonderful week.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're licensed marriage and family therapists and owners of The Therapy Group.
We're on a mission to make therapy and therapeutic topics more relatable and accessible.
So stay tuned, because in order to grow yourself, you gotta know yourself. So we are so excited to have Katie Duke here today. Katie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Love talking about anything in the mental health realm. So this is going to be great.
Yes. So you have, first of all, we're obsessed with Bad Decisions. We love your podcast. We love the episode you just did about turning 40 and the bullshit timelines.
Yeah. It's interesting because I don't think that those existed, years and years and years ago. I think ever since the growth of the media and social media, we like to tell people what the fuck to do with their life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Can I curse on here?
Yes. You can fucking say whatever you want.
We've had a lot of feedback about how much we curse.
We fucking love it.
Yeah. I have several, a few of my bad reviews in the Apple podcast review place on iTunes is she curses so much.
That's ours too.
Ours is just that how could these be real therapists? They curse too much. They're too unprofessional. Because we love telling everyone and women what the fuck to do with their mouths, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because, right. We also have a predetermined, box that we like to put professionals in. And right. They can't have lives outside of that.
Right. Well, oh my gosh, which makes total sense, right? And so you went through, so we'd love to hear a little bit about, one, we're obsessed with Bad Decisions, how the podcast came to be, and a little bit about what life on the front line during the pandemic was like. You also had severe COVID yourself. People on the show know I almost lost my dad to COVID. I believe that healthcare workers are absolute angels. They 100% saved my dad's life. He wouldn't be here today, and he still has long-term symptoms. And so we're sitting here with this additional spike. We just started collecting all of our vaccine proof from our clinicians and everyone coming in so we can make our practice as safe as possible. And it's still interesting that you're still getting all this negative feedback about what is truth and science. And we're sitting here talking about it. So we'd love to hear a little bit more about all that from you.
So I've been a nurse for 17 years and a nurse practitioner for the last 6.5. 2020 was a pretty interesting year. At the end of 2019, I actually moved from my home in New York to DC, to move in with my long-term boyfriend at the time. Can you guys see where this is going?
Yep.
Yep. Uh-huh. We're prepared.
It's, it's leading up to a full-blown shitstorm of way too many life-changing events at once. But next thing you know, like several months into living together and, you know, COVID hits and I'm working in DC as a cardiothoracic nurse practitioner and I'm not having a good time adjusting to living in DC. I miss New York. I miss my home. I really wasn't even sure that like us being living together was like the right thing to do. But, you know, let's just keep forcing shit that doesn't work. Because that's what
especially when we're stuck inside.
Yeah, yeah. Well, locked in syndrome there. So April 1st, in the midst of a pandemic, my boyfriend wakes up in the morning and he breaks up with me. And I have to pack my bags and go stay in a hotel. And the next day I went to work and I barely made it through the shift. And I felt like watching all the stuff on the news about what was happening in New York. I was like, oh my God, I can't. I'm like, those are my people. And also I'm like, and man, like, fuck this, man. This motherfucker just dumped me. And who gets dumped in the middle of a pandemic? Like, I'm sorry. It's like a new, like, societal low I've achieved. And I was kind of proud of that. But I was like, you know, I can either stay here and, like, keep begging this guy to take me back, which, of course, you know I did. that didn't really work out. Right. But I drove my car back to New York and I took a crisis COVID contract. And I was stationed out of the Sheraton Hotel, which is basically they shut all the hotels down and they moved all the nurses and doctors in the hotels. So we were like checked up in a big dorm, no room service. They didn't even give us free movie channels. Like it was complete bullshit. The pool was closed. The gym was closed.
Not even free porn.
No, like nothing, nothing at all. And we're like, we couldn't even rent pay-per-view movies, which is the fucked up thing.
Really fucked up. It's like, what else? You couldn't even
pay for
it
yourself.
So they put each room had like a little coffee maker, but the crisis COVID like contract staffing agency was like, you know, you're going to be here for who knows how long. So we suggest you buy a miniature fridge and a microwave and, you know, just kind of like live out of this room. And so I remember a group of us nurses went to Target that day and we bought miniature fridges, microwaves. We bought like stuff to make sandwiches and ramen noodles. We were literally living off shit. And we started our crisis contract that week. And I was like still really dealing with a very, very devastating breakup. Like we were together for several years and I moved my entire life for him. Wow. Because we were going to like get engaged. And when I look back, I ignored so many red flags, like all the red flags, just in my face, like a fucking bowl of noodles. Like it was just high red flag. And I mean, there's so many times where like, I look back and I'm like, God, we should have never really even been together that long, but hey, so I have all that on my plate and like, I'm not really sleeping that well. I'm not really eating much, but like sandwiches and food that's getting donated from people like around the neighborhood and Times Square and stuff. So we start the crisis contract and I get stationed out of the hospital in Brooklyn called Kings County Hospital. Mm-hmm. Very underserved hospital, very under-resourced, a very underserved population, very under-resourced hospital. And we were like reusing the same mask for like 10 days, 14 days at a time. And I remember my first day in the COVID ICU there, I walked in and do you guys remember the movie, The Matrix?
Yes.
You remember when Neo is like getting like a tour of like the underworld and he walks in that room and they have all the humans that are like plugged in and they're just like on top of each other?
Yes. That's what it felt like.
That's what this room felt like because there were 35 patients just stacked up next to each other, all COVID positive patients, all on ventilators, all which life support. And the interesting thing is that ICU was a makeshift ICU. It was actually an outpatient testing center before COVID hit. So it should have never even been an ICU. Like there were no rooms, there were no doors. Patients were literally just lined up like it was an army barracks. And the first thing that I thought of, I walked in, I was like, oh, this is not kosher. This is bad. And I was like, this should not be this way. And I'm like, we're working in a fucking hot zone because the nurse's station wasn't even separated from where the patients were. So it was just COVID everywhere. Yeah. Oh, couldn't breathe the COVID air fresheners. Like, it was everywhere. And I kept thinking to myself, like, this is really fucked up. But I'm like, this can't go on forever. So that ended up proving me to be very wrong. So I was working a crisis contract, and we had about three people die each shift. And I think, like, working in healthcare, you get used to death. And it's not that it doesn't affect you, but you learn to deal with it. And you have different coping mechanisms, you know, it depends on what kind of death it is. Anytime I used to work, you know, in cardiology, and I would have someone who was end stage heart failure, like, it would be a relief when they finally passed away, because they were not living a life of quality. And it was almost kind of like a blessing on the patient and the family. And then, you know, we have patients, when I used to be an ER nurse, who would come in and they would have very traumatic, very sudden, very unexpected deaths. That's different. But like the COVID deaths, like, I guess the thing about this is that the difficult part about this was that all of these people were like so different. Like, we know on like the cardiology floor, we know that we can expect, you know, people who have genetic problems to have heart failure and cardiomegaly and all these other issues, people with really bad comorbidities to have heart disease. But like, you can put people kind of into like, well, you're a high risk population. But the thing about with the COVID patients, and it still exists to this day, is it affects anybody and everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, you can be a 29-year-old marathon runner, and you could be in the fucking ICU on a ventilator on life support. And you could be a 56-year-old with diabetes and high blood pressure, you know, who used to smoke cigarettes, and you can be on the same ventilator and have the same problems. And you can be a 35, you know, year old woman who's pregnant and a mother of five kids at home, and it's the same situation. So the really like initial difficult part was that like the nurses were dealing with a really overwhelming situation. We didn't have resources and supplies. We were like hand cranking beds because Wow. We ran out of hospital beds, and FEMA basically found a bunch of old beds from like, I think like the military or something. And like, they were hand crank beds. And so we were like hand cranking beds. We were hanging drips without pumps, which means you have to like count the drops that go in the drip chamber every minute and do a calculation like manually, which is shit that we would never, ever, ever do.
If you listen to one of our latest episodes titled Em and Jen Fall Apart, you know the current feelings of burnout that we're both facing. Running our business, the therapy group, keeping up with the podcast, and enduring a house renovation leaves little time for grocery shopping, meal prepping, and cooking. So we are extremely thankful for our sponsor, Hungry Root. When I received my first delivery of the Hungry Root box, it felt like a breath of fresh air. Hungry Root saves me so much time and offers customizable options. Plus, with perfectly portioned ingredients, I'm wasting far less food than I would if I were left to my own devices in the kitchen. No more throwing away wilted veggies or expired condiments lurking in the back of my fridge. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high quality meat and seafood, smoothies, sweets, ready to eat meals, kids snacks and meals, vitamins and supplements, and much more. I discovered Three Little Pigs, spinach, feta, and egg bites in my last delivery, and they are my new obsession. Also, Hungry Root's coconut curry sauce is not to be missed. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Anyone else go through soap and cleaning products insanely quick? At both my house and at our business, we're constantly replacing plastic bottles. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? And if that's not bad enough, most cleaning formulas are 90% water, which is heavy to ship, leading to excessive carbon emissions. That's why we are thrilled to introduce our newest sponsor, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautifully cohesive design that looks great on your counter. Fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. You will never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run. Refills start at just $2.25. You can even set up a subscription or buy in bulk for an additional savings. From cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blueland products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. And I'll be honest, I was a bit skeptical at first. Can eco-friendly products really tackle tough messes? Well, Blueland proved me wrong. The products I received, like their multi-service cleaner and bathroom cleaner, were powerful. Grime, grease, and dirt don't stand a chance. Blueland is not only good for the planet, but also for your wallet. And the starter kit I received was beautifully packed. The bottles are sleek and sturdy, and the scents are amazing. Lemongrass, lavender eucalyptus, and fresh lemon, or you can choose fragrance-free. Blueland has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
And all of this was like a big mind fuck, first of all. But I think the crazy part was that it was just so overwhelming. And, you know, I never really thought that I would live to see a pandemic. I have a whole family of nurses who also feels the same way. Never thought that we would ever live to see any sort of like a pandemic, but it was just so incredibly overwhelming, but you just didn't really know how to cope. So I think the first problem where people in healthcare first started to really deal with was just the overwhelming part of it, the accountability and the coping issues. But on top of that, we also had to take on like the place of family members, because this was when no one was allowed in the hospital and everyone's dying. Like in that ICU, no patients ever left the ICU. They all died. No one got like taken off the ventilator and like sent home or sent to rehab. No, everyone died. And the thing is like, if the family can't be there and this person's dying, what do you think happens? We were FaceTiming people to spend their last few minutes with their loved one. And, you know, this is happening multiple times a shift. So we would FaceTime, you know, their family. I remember this one guy specifically. He was 59 years old. No, he was like in his late 50s. And he and his wife, they had like 7 kids. And then each of those kids was married and had like 2 or 3 kids. He had a very large family. And the family had been all quarantining together from the beginning of like when the stay-at-home orders were issued. And he was like totally fine. And he came into the hospital one day with like leg pain and shortness of breath. And he never left the hospital. And I remember FaceTiming his family. It was like myself, 3 other nurses, 2 residents, the attending physician, and then several of the NPs. So it was like a whole group of us huddled around. And his wife was like, can you hold his hand? Can you play this song on your iPhone? Can you rub the back of his head? He loves that. I used to always do that to him. And they were married. They got married when they were 19 years old. Like they were together for like 40 something years. Like it was insane. But there has never been a moment in my like nursing or healthcare life that has been that heavy. Like that's fucking heavy. I mean, it was just terrible. And honestly, I think that's the part that really kind of fucked with all of us the most was this, we were carrying all these, we were filling all these places, you know, of family members to give them comfort, you know, during the time that their loved ones were dying because they couldn't be there. And that's like, you can't really swap that out. Like these are complete strangers as far as they're concerned, you know, and it's just, oh, it was fucking terrible, man. And so, you know, to think here we are a year later and we have all these shit for brains on social media and, you know, on places like Fox News and these other places and that are just spreading like so much non-factual information and people eat it up like fucking crazy. And then we're getting back to the point where hospitals are getting overwhelmed and the same thing's going to happen again. And at this point, a year ago, it wasn't preventable. We didn't have vaccines. We didn't have the technology. We didn't really know how to really even treat COVID. But now it's preventable. So after several weeks of working in that area, I remember it was on like a Saturday evening. I started getting diarrhea, and then I got a fever of like 104, and I started getting body aches. And I was like, oh, fuck, I have COVID. But I just didn't really think much of it because I was like, you know, I'll probably feel like shit for a week and I'll have to quarantine for 2 weeks and then I'll be back, whatever. And an entire week went by, and I was in my hospital. I was in my hotel bed, and I was just miserable. Like, probably some of the worst body ache pain I've ever had. And I just couldn't eat anything. I was like shitting my brains out, and I was like, what the fuck? And I was taking Tylenol every 6 hours, and my fever would just be through the roof. And finally on Sunday, it was actually the Sunday, like, right? Or it was like May 9th or 10th. And I started getting chest pain, shortness of breath, and my oxygen levels dropped, like, because I had a little pulse oximeter on my finger. And I had to go to the hospital, and I ended up being in the hospital for 2 weeks because I had severe COVID. I developed COVID pneumonia. I had to take blood thinners because my levels were elevated, indicating that I could likely have a blood clot somewhere. And I couldn't even like breathe. Like, I couldn't walk 10 feet without getting short of breath. I had to have someone help me shower. Like, it was fucking crazy. And I was totally fine. I was going to Orange Theory like 4 days a week before I left DC. Like, I've always been, you know, a very active person, and I don't have any medical history. Like, I don't have high blood pressure. I don't have diabetes. I don't have any medical problems other than like kidney stones and, you know, needed some stitches here or there because I'm a, you know, an asshole when it comes to fighting bitches in seventh grade. We'll save that for a different podcast. So I was in the hospital for several weeks. It's crazy because on my third or fourth day at the hospital, my staffing agency called me and they're like, so we're going to need you to come and clean out your hotel room because we need it for somebody else. And I'm like, well, I can't really do that because I'm kind of in the hospital, like in the step down unit on oxygen. And, you know, I've kind of sick. And they're like, oh, well, do you have someone who can come do it for you? And I'm like, no, like there's a million hotels in New York City. You can't find another fucking room to put somebody like to put this person in. And they ended up calling me the next day. telling me that my ended up calling me and telling me that my contract was canceled and that they would no longer be needing me. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like, nurses are so appreciated. And it was honestly just some of the worst time of like my life. And so flash forward, here we are a year later, and people are just being honestly, like, I think people are real fucking selfish. I think that people are real selfish. I think that nobody cares about the basic things that our society needs to function, which is we need public health and we need infrastructure of the healthcare and hospital systems and of our government. Like, those are just basic things that we need. But so many people just feel like their freedom is being infringed upon because you're trying to force me to get a vaccine. And it's like, wow, like, how fucking dare you? Like, people pick and choose what they want to believe. And, you know, I'm not convinced that I'm going to sit here and, you know, be able to convert all the anti-vaxxers out there, but we're heading in the same direction because the hospitals are getting overwhelmed. And that's when shit hits the fan, because if a hospital has no beds left, when your grandma starts having chest pain, which normally would be an in and out the next day kind of thing, even if you're having a heart attack, what do you think's going to happen? She's going to die because the hospitals have no beds and there's nothing that anyone can do. And people don't think like that, though. They only think about themselves. Mm-hmm. So now we're turning into a pandemic of the unvaxxed and of the ignorant and of, you know, the selfish people. And I just don't know how we got to, well, I know how, like, social media, basically. which is both a blessing and a curse. But, you know, people used to really believe and trust science, and I miss those days. So, but yeah, so that's been my last year.
Well, is It's such a funny thing because, so we were talking before, my grandfather worked on the polio vaccine, and my dad was one of the first kids in the United States to get polio that my grandmother brought him to the parking lot. My grandfather ran outside, gave him the shot, and ran back inside the lab. Wow. Like, there was a time that people were, like, so willing and honored science and trusted this, and it is so drastically turned around, right? Like, I'm someone who also has a child who is not allowed to get vaccinated because they're 2.5, right? So there's all this population of people that are truly not able to get the vaccine because it's not approved for them yet. And what happens there, right? But I would love to hear about, because everything I heard from you was trauma, 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 right? Like, so, like, we have now, right? We now have.
We've exceeded our yearly quota.
Yes. The check mark has been, yep, made in all those boxes, right? And so we now have all of these healthcare professionals that are having this residual trauma and are sitting here looking like, oh my God, here I go again. How could I possibly do this? I'm already burnt out. And so what would you say to that? What do you think is needed to best take care? And, like, what would be your thoughts and advice for healthcare professionals?
Can you believe we're on year 5 of Shrink Chicks? We have been podcasting since 2019 and have somehow yet to change the photo of us on the cover of the podcast. We are planning a photo shoot in a few weeks so we can finally update our cover art. We both obviously need new outfits for the photo shoot, but really didn't want to break the bank. So thank goodness for Quince, where we can get multiple high-quality outfits for a very reasonable price. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. For the shoot, we want to go with a few different looks, one being monochrome, so I opted for a few key items from Quince's collection, including their Mongolian cashmere tee, classic trouser pant, and structured blazer. I couldn't resist adding their timeless 14 karat gold jewelry pieces to complete my look, because who doesn't love accessorizing? The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
My thoughts and advice for healthcare professionals, it's not your fucking job to save the system. And if you feel that you are burnt out, and especially if you feel that you are having very dark thoughts and thoughts of harming yourself or other people, or that, like, apathy, I think you need to exit stage left.
Mm-hmm.
And because if you don't preserve yourself, I mean, we all know the hospital and healthcare systems, they don't care about the staff. They especially don't care about the nurses. Because the nurses don't make hospitals any money. They love the physicians and they love the surgeons, and because they bring in income. And even though our hospital is a non-for-profit industry, it's very much for profit. And we have nurses screaming all over, like, social media saying, like, you guys, we're drowning. Our hospital CEO just got a $2 million bonus, but we are so short-staffed, I can't provide safe care to my patients. And so the hospitals are prioritizing, you know, all of the wrong areas right now. And then they want to turn around and glorify us as heroes and angels and your health.
They'll give you a sign outside and a nice clap at 7 p.m.
Right, you'll get like a cake.
We'll get a sign outside. We'll get a pizza party. Right. But all we want is just more staff. But also, like, you need to pay people what they should be getting paid.
Yes.
And, you know, I think a lot of nurses nationwide, we've always been underpaid and very overworked, especially for the amount that we contribute to patient care and, you know, how much of what we do revolves around a patient's hospitalization or their stay. But the issue lies within, we work in a very greedy system that really just doesn't give a fuck, because hospitals look at it as nurses are disposable. If you don't want to work here, I can get 100 more where you came from. But the problem is that nurses are being much better advocates for themselves these days. And last year, towards the beginning of this year, we saw a mass exodus from clinical hospital work. nurses are like, yeah, fuck this. I don't need to work like this anymore. There's other options for me. And that's a great thing. But I hate to say it, our healthcare system is going to crumble. And it's not going to be our fault. But it's like, no one does anything. No one gives a fuck. And the thing is like, what do you think would happen? I'm just going to use this as like an analogy. What do you think would happen if, for example, like LeBron James was like, you know, Lakers, I don't really feel like I'm being valued and appreciated. I don't really think I want to play in the finals this year. Like the entire world would shut down. Like the ESPN would create a major campaign. The New York Times, Sports, Washington, everybody would be like, oh my God, we can't let this happen. Right. Oh my God. And all of a sudden money would come pouring out of the woodwork at the Staples Center. And you know, he's technically a hero. He has cereal, he has shoes, he has millions and millions of dollars, but do you think any of his skills or talents matter in a time like right now? Not saying that they don't, but like, let's get down to the shit that actually should be a priority. Yes. Like why?
It's entertainment. It's not life-saving.
Yeah. So like, why aren't healthcare providers being paid crisis pay when they've been working in a crisis for over a year? Why aren't healthcare providers loans forgiven? Like, we can spend $1 trillion on the military or I don't know, other random shit, but like we can't just take a one-time thing and take everyone's healthcare provider loans and be like, you guys don't need to pay your loans back. Thanks for sacrificing yourselves to save
your body too.
Yes. Well, and also, you know, like even just hearing that story about the man who was dying of COVID and his family couldn't come see him and the fact that you guys had to step in for that, like the emotional weight of that, like even hearing that as mental health providers, that would be so heavy for us.
It's very, yeah.
And, you know, and we have tools and we're like, okay, you know, we can go to a therapist. And I want to know, like, what's in place for you guys in order to support your mental health, if anything, during that time? Because the weight of that is so heavy, and then you're expected to go back the next day and do it again for 12 hours.
Oh, no, not go back the next day. You have to turn around after you pronounce his death and go to the rest of the patient.
Right.
Like, that's the worst part because it happens in like the middle of a shift. You can't just be like, oh, this death was really rough. I'm going to take the rest of the day off. Doesn't work like that. What's happening to like support our mental health? Well, do you guys have sound effects? We could insert like a cricket.
We could. Yes, this is the time. We'll figure it. We'll ask the editor.
Yeah, the editor will put it in right now.
So I'm gonna say, what have the hospitals and healthcare systems done to support our mental health? You can insert cricket sound here. They have, you know, they'll order pizza parties. And for Nurses Week this past year in May, 2021, they started giving out bags of rocks. Bags of,
I'm sorry, what?
I'm making this up. Actual rocks. And they would give
for
out
what? Rocks. You could tie yourself to and throw yourself in a fucking river. What are you supposed to do with the goddamn rocks?
Yep. Rocks and like paint pens. And they would tell the nurses on the unit, you're the rock of this unit. We want you to write a note to a fellow nurse and let them know that they're the rock of this unit. I'm not making this up. It was a huge uproar.
I think I had to do that at summer camp one time.
I think it's just like when people are cheap and they just are like, oh, yeah, we want to give presents out. Let's just go outside and grab some rocks.
So we literally got rocks and pizza parties. So the hospitals have not done anything to support mental health. They haven't brought mental health therapists or counselors or psychiatrists on site. They don't offer debriefings. And I know back when I used to be an ER nurse, I was an ER nurse in a pediatric and adult level one trauma center in Manhattan for like 10 years. There was a lot of shit that came through those doors that that caused some mental health trauma. And our directors, they used to always bring, you know, the psychiatrists and the residents and some of the interns and the mental health therapists down from like the inpatient unit after we would have like a traumatic pediatric death, or like when we had to take care of a woman one time who had just murdered three toddlers, like lots of trauma. But they would bring it down immediately and they would be like, take the next like hour and sit in here and let's help you debrief because we know you have to finish out your shift. And I mean, that's not, it's more of band-aid. It's not really like a fix-all thing, but they made an attempt to do something, but they haven't really done anything, you know, throughout this time. But I'll tell you who has came through is companies like BetterHelp and Headspace and Talkspace. Those online therapy platforms, like BetterHelp, I think was offering like free for healthcare providers. And I think Talkspace and Headspace as well. And I think Calm also, the Calm app, they offered like free subscriptions for healthcare providers. But like, it's, you know, that's a step in the right direction. But again, it's like, it's not really fixing the root of the issue. And the root of the issue is that healthcare providers work in emotionally, psychologically traumatizing environments. And that's just an average shift on a daily basis, right? But then we're also dealing with a profound amount of death and disparities and just like working in like what's like a war zone, and we're not getting the support that like the military gets, you know, when they come back from a war zone. And I'm not comparing it word for word, but so like a lot of us turn to like social media, Instagram, and we kind of have a very supportive community there. And it's kind of sad that that's where, you know, we all have to turn to get support and to find community and camaraderie, but like that's a guaranteed place that you'll get it. Mm-hmm. And
it's interesting as we're also talking about like there is so much effort put on like personal responsibility, like the way that we also do with like climate change, right? Like, okay, like I can recycle and compost, but if 70% of the CO2 emissions are coming from Fortune 500 companies, I can't do shit about that, right? Like, same thing. Like, you can do whatever you can in those 12-hour shifts, but if they're not giving pay, if they're not giving services, if they're not providing, how about general PPE for you, how are you supposed to make real change? And, like, this does go back to the conversation we've had many times of internal versus external burnout. You can't do anything with external burnout. You can be your best self. You can go in and meditate before that 12-hour shift and go to therapy afterwards. But that's external shit that you can. That's policy issues.
And I think one of the really sad things, too, is that the people who are drawn to these positions are people who are very empathetic and, like, very caring. Yeah. And people who love to take care of people.
We're sensitive people.
Exactly. And so to... I know this sounds like kind of corny, but like to dim that light because there's that support isn't there, because the recognition, the appreciation, the, you know, the compensation is not there, when it's so important for people to have that sensitivity towards other people, especially now, that is being ripped apart from you, because you can only take so much. You can only give so much until you get completely worn down.
Completely worn down. And that's what's caused this mass exodus. And so now there are hospitals that are across the country, specifically in the hot spots, which are specifically in more red states, if you will, that are losing nurses, and nurses are walking off in the middle of shifts and risking their license because they're just that like done. But also nurses that are like retiring and resigning like completely out of nowhere, which it's not out of nowhere to them, but the hospital's like, I can't believe you would retire. You've got 10 more years left of service. You need to pay us. And then also, you know, you have people that, for example, like me, last year, I worked through all that. When I was discharged from the hospital, I was actually homeless. Because like I had nowhere to go, because my last home was in DC, which where all of my shit was still there also. And so I had to go stay with my sister for a couple weeks. And then when I got back to, cause she lived in Chicago, I drove from New York to Chicago and then drove from Chicago back to New York a few weeks later when I signed a lease for an apartment. And I was out of work for a few months because I couldn't fucking breathe. I was having bad side effects, bad long-term effects. Well, you know, you said that your father was experiencing the same thing. And then I decided to, you know, okay, well, let me just give it a few months. And so I followed up with my doctor and he's like, all right, I think we could probably send you back to work now. Your pulmonary function tests are looking better. You know, your CAT scan looks fine. You don't show any fibrosis or any scarring, which is good. He's like, it's just going to take some time to get to feel back like yourself. And I went back to work and I was working as a trauma surgery NP in Brooklyn again. And I went back and I was just like, okay, you know, well, it was from a different perspective because I wasn't working like in the ICU. I was working trauma surgery. So I was seeing, you know, like 12-year-olds getting shot and, you know, 2-year-olds getting shot. And
just a different type of trauma.
A different type of trauma. But honestly, like I was an ER nurse, I'm used to that trauma. It's, isn't that terrible to say, like, I'm used to that kind of trauma. It's fine. That's like regular.
Yeah, that's the regular old trauma.
Yes. Just the regular, degular trauma. But I started getting like bullied really bad from my fucking director who was an NP. And she was just like, you know, those women out there who just hate other women.
Yes, we do know those. I think they're the people that are so mad that we're all cursing.
Yeah.
To the same people who are giving us negative reviews on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah. Be like, okay, thanks, Karen. So she was my like director and she would just fuck with me every day. And 3 months later, I was just like, dude, between like COVID and me getting sick because the hospital like didn't have the resources to get new masks each day. And then coming back and getting fucked with by this fucking bitch every day, I was like, yeah, fuck this. And I quit. I resigned. I walked away. And I initially kind of thought I just need a little more of a break and I'll just keep exsanguinating my savings account because I can't go back to work right now. And I ended up doing that, but I never went back. And that was October of 2020. And I decided, I was like, why do we keep forcing ourselves back in these toxic relationships? Because that's really what the hospital is. And so I've kind of made it my mission since then to help encourage other nurses to not only to help them kind of deal with burnout, but also to help them understand that their value does not lie within working in a hospital. And that if to recognize when they are in a toxic work environment, which is pretty much every hospital out there, which is sad. But you know, there are a lot that are great. Like my sister's an NP and she has a great job and she really loves her job and she's appreciated and that's great, but that's the exception and not the norm. But I have kind of dedicated myself to helping nurses to follow their passions and create goals in life that don't involve the hospital, that involve them, you know, pursuing what really interests them and, you know, starting an Etsy shop, if you want to start a fucking Etsy shop, like, or, you know, starting, you know, to be a mentor or other things that take them out of that toxic situation. Because let me tell you, if we have already been in this for a year and a half and none of our actions or behaviors from hospitals have changed towards the nurses and the physicians and the staff, it's never going to change. It's never going to get better. And unfortunately, our government isn't going to do anything about it either. So I'm trying to encourage people to take action into their own hands and realize, like, you don't need to work in the hospital to be a good nurse. You don't need to kill yourself every single day during your shift. Like, exhaustion is not a badge of honor. It's not, but we love to be in like the worst environment and brag about it. And it's like, why?
Well, I think too, there's this expectation, right? Like, you're becoming a nurse. And so that means you have to completely sacrifice yourself for others. Right. Like, there's this expectation in a way of like, you have to give yourself up completely. My husband used to be a nurse too. And he was completely burnt out by the time I met him. This was way before COVID. And he worked at a hospital in Philadelphia, completely burnt out. And you could.
He was miserable.
Completely miserable. But it took him some years to recover from that burnout. He is now a real estate agent. But you can completely see the difference in how he's functioning on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, he was 10 years into it before I met him, and his entire family is nurses too.
Mine too.
Exactly. Runs in the family. But you see it. You really see the burnout. And so I have a question for you is like, how have you been? Like, what's the difference for you since you left nursing?
I think since I left like the traditional nursing world, which is like the hospital, the clinical setting, I'm not burnt out anymore. So that's that. I removed the external factor that was contributing to my burnout. I removed myself from the unhealthy relationship because that's really what environments are. They're not safe. They're very abusive. They don't offer you protection in times of vulnerability, in times of need. And that's like classic triad of unhealthy, toxic relationship, right? So I removed myself from that situation. So I'm not burnt out anymore. And I think for me, like, it's just been kind of tricky for the last, 10 months where I've been like, all right, so this whole like self-employed thing, what the fuck is that about? I'd be like, okay, so am I just never going to have a retirement fund? Like, do I start that on my own? Like, what is happening? I'm paying $1,000 a month for Cobra. Fabulous. Like, what the hell is happening? So I have a different type of trauma that I'm going through now. And that's just the trauma of like, kind of like being thrown in a pool and being forced to swim. But, I miss taking care of patients. I miss, the camaraderie of, working with, the team. But I do not miss having to walk on my fucking like toes every single day in the hospital, wondering who's going to fuck with me because I'm on Instagram, because I'm Instagram popular, whatever the fuck they want to say. Who's going to be the jealous bitch who's my director, who's just going to be, bullying me every fucking day. Am I not going to have enough PPE, to last me throughout the shift? And am I going to get, deathly sick and be in the hospital for 2 weeks because of it? And I don't have to worry about those things anymore. So that's a great step forward.
Yeah. Before we move forward, doing our calling some bullshit segment that we do, we want you to call out some bullshit in your industry, which is quite fucking easy to do. I think you got going on
pretty much
the whole episode.
It was pretty much the whole episode, right?
I want to make sure people really hear this last point that you said, because I think it's so important that we feel like we have to have it perfectly set to leave something, that we have to have the money figured out and we have to have the resources figured out.
Why would anybody be responsible and do that?
Yes, right. And we want to. And ideally, if that could happen, that's great. But sometimes we have to save ourselves, that our life matters more than figuring out the retirement plan. And I think that like that is really important for people to hear, because that is so hard for people to leave something until they feel like they have a perfectly new plan set. And I want to make sure everyone listening hears that point of what you're saying.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you see those fucking memes all over Instagram that say, before you quit your full-time day job, you need to have 6 months of your all expenses of your life saved up, or you need to have, all of your debt paid, and you need to have this. And I'm like, oh, I definitely didn't have that. So like, I think,
but maybe getting that part could kill you,
right?
Getting that part, figuring it out and making it right by that meme could end up killing you.
Well, you're just going back on the hamster wheel, right? You're just going back on the hamster wheel. I have a group chat of some other like nurse entrepreneurs that all of us have kind of left the traditional workplace and taken big risks, big leaps, and just been like, all right, we're going to start our own shit. And I remember like we would do check-ins like every week, every couple weeks. And they'll be like, Katie, when are you going to leave your full-time job? Because like you have all this other stuff that you've built. And I'm like, I can't do that. I'm like, I'm going to lose my street credit if I leave my full-time job, or I'm going to, be broke if I'm not going to have enough money or whatever. I'm like, I live in New York City. My fucking rent is $4,000 a month. What the hell are you talking about? So like, I think the only thing that you should have is you should have planned out a way that you're going to get your health insurance. So you need to plan out, am I going to have to pay for Cobra, or can I get private health insurance, or can I apply for Medicaid? Or can I get on maybe a significant other or a spouse's plan or something? I had neither of those at the time. Still don't have a spouse, but hopefully working on it. But the other thing that you should have outside of that is you really need to have a group of people around you who can encourage you, but also give you constructive feedback. Like, not just sit there and coddle you the entire time. Someone who can say, all right, listen, I'm glad that you took this step, but let's get to working on something that can give you financial stability and peace of mind and work-life balance. So you have to actually have people around you who can be a good support system, but who also won't let you just like, drown in your sorrows for, leaving your daytime job, and starting this whole new chapter. And so I had people around me who pushed me, which was good, but also provided a lot of support. And I'm not going to tell people, be like, oh yeah, you have to have this much money in the bank, because I hate to say it, but like, you're either going to figure it out or you're going to go get another job. And right. like, you don't have to go back to like the toxic environment. I have thought so many times about going and working for like Instagram or Google or fucking, you know, being like a concierge travel nurse, or going and working for like an aesthetics practice just so I can get free Botox. Like, I like, there's good so move. Many other, yeah, right? Strategic move. But there's so many other options out there for people. But for some reason, we just always get drawn back to the thing that's most public and most prevalent, which are like these traditional workplaces. And for healthcare people, you know, hospitals and healthcare facilities. But like, you really don't need all of that. So like, if you see those stupid fucking memes that are like, before you leave your, quit your job to become an entrepreneur, you need to have 7 months of savings, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm sorry. I don't know anyone. I'm 40. I don't know anyone my age who has 7 months of anything saved up.
Right.
Nope.
Nope.
Yeah.
We're entrepreneurs. We figure this out every day. Every day it's something new.
We just throw
out.
Shit at the wall and hope that it sticks.
Yep, hope. And then ask our accountant and lawyer a bunch of questions.
I think that there's like a safety in like pretending like you can plan it out, right? To say like, yes. Okay, well, I can save this much and then I will be, it will be great. Like yeah. nothing bad will happen, when really that's, it's not preventable, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and there's a safe. There's a safety in getting a paycheck from someone else, right? If I work this much, this is the paycheck I'm going to get and we're done. But, and to leave that kind of safety net is scary. But I think when the burnout exceeds that, and it no longer feels safe there, right? Mm-hmm. Like the emotional safety is no longer there. And that it makes sense to say, listen, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to surround myself with people who support me. And I'll throw shit up against the wall and see if it sticks.
Yeah.
I mean, and if not, I'll find a job.
Yeah, we'll figure something will, yeah. it'll work out in some fucking way, just usually not the way you thought it was right. going to, right?
Yeah, okay. But like, you can find a job that is not as heavy as the job that you're leaving.
Yeah.
Yes.
I could talk to you all day, because fuck the system and I have a lot to say about it, but we have to go to going, calling bullshit. I would appreciate, could we say, call some bullshit out? You know, for anyone listening, we're huge fans of the vaccine. We were very lucky. We got the vaccine super early. We were super excited about it. We felt completely honored we were able to get it back in January.
We like had a party.
We
had
pretty much had a party
like, when it was, we went to get the vaccine.
I cried to my nurse and thanked her, because that was all I could think about, was my dad made it and holy shit, there's an end. So could you maybe call some bullshit out on some anti-vaxxer stuff?
Oh, absolutely. So... Actually, let me pull up my thing that I had prepared for this moment.
Oh.
So there actually was some lovely new information that was released yesterday by the CDC, who, by the way, you know, we should trust after all. Science is an ever evolving process, but you have to trust the data that we do have. So I'm going to call bullshit on people stating that the vaccine causes infertility, causes miscarriages, or will affect your fertility down the line. So I'm going to call bullshit on that. In fact, COVID vaccination is recommended for all people age 12 and older, especially and including people who are pregnant, breastfeeding, trying to become pregnant, or might become pregnant in the future. And the issue is that pregnant people are getting very, very severe COVID illness. In alignment with all of the organizations that care for people, which is the Reproductive Medicine Society, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and also the American Academy of Pediatrics as well, there are no evidence of safety concerns or fertility issues. And everyone fully supports in those organizing bodies someone age 12 and older getting it. If your doctor or your nurse or your NP or your fucking neighbor is saying, do not get the vaccine, you're pregnant, or you're going to be pregnant, or you know, you might be pregnant in 10 years, you need to ask them why they are not following the current scientific evidence-based guidelines. And then you need to find a new person to get your care from. So this, I think, is the most important thing to get out there right now, because pregnant people are getting really, really severe illness and they are dying very often. And, you know, the sad thing is I have 142,000 followers on Instagram. Majority of those followers are nurses or nursing professionals. You should see the messages people are sending me. Completely healthy, pregnant women with several kids at home coming into the hospital and having like a cough or a fever or body aches, and then getting admitted to the ICU and on a ventilator within 24 hours, and they don't make it off there. And then the nursing and the hospital staff has to tell their husband or their spouse or their partner, we're going to have to keep her on the ventilator until it's safe to deliver the baby. And then after that, your spouse will die. But your baby hopefully will survive. Your baby hopefully will be born, you know, healthy. And they are delivering 27, 28 weekers, 30 weekers, and the mothers are dying. They're being taken off of life support after that because they are in such critical condition. They are on last ditch efforts of life support. And for some reason, you know, COVID is really affecting pregnant people exponentially more severe than other people. But again, like the emphasis, you guys have to, like, people listening to this have to understand that the emphasis of this is that we do have a lot of data. We do have a lot of science. We do have a year of monitoring people, and the sample size is massive. There has never been a sample size, which means the amount of people who have gotten the vaccine during trial and administration periods has never been this big for any vaccine ever. So I think that's the first thing of bullshit I need to call out. The second thing of bullshit that I need to call out is that getting the vaccine means that you will never get COVID. That's bullshit. Getting the vaccine means that you will not be severely ill, be hospitalized, or die from COVID. And as someone who was hospitalized from COVID, I can fucking tell you, you don't want it. You don't want to get severe COVID. So the vaccine will prevent you from dying. The vaccine will prevent you from getting severely ill or being hospitalized. And at the end of the day, like, I think people just have this preconceived notion that if you get the vaccine, you'll never get COVID. And so that's what the far right people are trying to spread is, well, listen, I mean, the vaccine isn't even effective. Everyone's getting breakthrough COVID. Motherfucker, those people are literally maybe sick at home for a few days, for a week. They feel like they have the flu, but they're fine. Meanwhile, all the unvaccinated people, which consists of 90% of hospitalized COVID patients right now, are unvaccinated, 90%. And all the ones who are dying are unvaccinated. So that's the second half of the bullshit that I'm going to call out. So please get the vaccine. If you are getting information from people, make sure your people who you're getting information from are reputable, reliable sources who are following the latest standards that are based off of scientific research and evidence-based data.
And a reminder that essential oils don't count and also are not FDA approved.
Yeah, so
that's a great add that to the
and just a reminder about those essential oils, although they do smell lovely, if you're taking those,
helpful for aromatherapy.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not going to, the eucalyptus lavender mint is not going to fix your COVID.
No.
You know, let me throw in a third piece.
Yes.
Calling out bullshit. My third piece of calling out bullshit is if you're listening to Dr. Celery Juice and if you think, oh, listen, I eat a raw plant-based vegan diet and my immune system is phenomenal, I don't need the vaccine because my immune system's great. Majority of patients in the hospital are completely healthy individuals prior to them coming to the hospital with severe COVID and then dying. So your immune system is functioning at different levels of at all times in your life. But just because you're a healthy individual and you are a super food, acai bowl, plant-based vegan, like, you know, superstar out there, like, it doesn't matter. You can still die from COVID.
Katie, we could talk to you all day. I am your biggest fan. I'm also obsessed with you on Instagram, just so you know. Now I'll go roll in your inbox and creep on you tons. But where can people find you?
So they can find me at on Instagram at the Katie Duke, and you can find my podcast on all podcast platforms, and it is called Bad Decisions, because it basically just talks about all the bad decisions in life I make and the good things that come out of that.
That is amazing.
Thank you so much. This was so informative.
You're amazing. We're obsessed with you.
This is totally fun. I'm trying to find your pages.
Well, don't worry. I'll stalk you very soon.
Yeah.
Don't worry. Thank you. We cannot thank you enough.